There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Plenty to look forward to, plenty to talk about as well, none more so than the early kickoff in the Premier League. Cardiff against Brighton and Hove Albion. All sorts of incidents. Let's get the latest. Matt Fortune.
Indeed, and we've got a red card. Brighton are down to 10 men, and the looking at the fallout here, I think we've had two further yellow cards dished out as part of the, I've written here as I was taking my notes, almighty kerfuffle that followed. And it's Stevens that has been given his marching orders by referee Martin Atkinson. Watching the replay there, what happened was the ball is cannoning around about 35, 40 yards from goal. Stevens nips in, wins the first one. The ball runs a little bit out of his reach for the second one, and he crunches in, and you can see, and of course I know they don't look great slowed down, but the studs are showing. It is only one-footed, but he is off the ground, and I think by the letter of the law, though, it's a little bit soft. That is a right red card. So Brighton now, 35 minutes gone, are going to have to play the rest of the game with 10 men.
Keep an eye on that one for you, Brighton. In action in the Premier League. It's interesting, isn't it? It shows you how things can change in the world of football. Just to let you know, there's no goals over in Spanish La Liga, but talking of things changing in the world of football, it wasn't that long ago that Portsmouth were a team and, of course, a force to be reckoned with on the South Coast. They're not in action in the Premier League today, but they are in action in the first round of the FA Cup, where they've had to travel to Maidenhead to play Maidenhead United in round one of the FA Cup. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you as well. No goals after half an hour there. Let's talk cricket, if we may, Archie, for a little while, because there's plenty of stories, plenty of storylines to get through as well. Where do you want to start? Should we start with England?
Yes, because it was supposed to be live cricket today, but it all was wrapped up yesterday in southern Sri Lanka, down in the beautiful, picturesque Gaul, where England actually have defeated Sri Lanka in 4 days, Tom, by 211 runs. That ends England's longest winless streak in overseas test matches. So congratulations to Joe Root and his team. They've overcome the subcontinent bogey and got a fine victory away from home. Just give you a quick update from day four. It was basically England bowling Sri Lanka out for 250 in the second innings, which gave them that big victory by 211 runs. Ben Foulkes, haven't heard much about this man before, comes in on debut, scores a century. Johnny Bairstow, who needs him, Tom? He's injured playing football. Missed the test match, and this man has grabbed his chance. Tough to drop Ben Foulkes in the next test match, but if Johnny Bairstow's fit, that may well happen and Foulkes may have to miss out. But interesting, a good problem there for Bayliss and Joe Root to figure out how they're going to deal with that. Second test gets underway in Kandy on Wednesday. So if you are heading down to Sri Lanka, like many of your friends did, Tom, down to Gaul, I'm sure they had a good time with the Barmy Army. Kandy gets underway Wednesday. But let's have a listen to Joe Root, very happy after breaking that long winless streak for England in overseas test matches.
It's been a brilliant 4 days cricket. I thought we played some really good stuff throughout. Be it from the position we're in at lunchtime on day one, from that point we've generally been in control of the whole game. And to manage to be as consistent as that throughout whole test match, something we've not always got right in the past, especially away from home. So to see the guys manage to do that for long periods of time and be really clear about how they're going to go about things, adapt to the surfaces as they changed, has been really pleasing.
Coming into today, I mean, how much hard work ahead did you think you had?
Yeah, I think it was a strange one because traditionally you come here and the pitch deteriorates quite rapidly and you're expecting it to turn square and be very hard work batting last on. And I think with the weather that's been around, it's sort of held together a lot better than you might have anticipated. And wanted to, with weather around as well, you want to make sure you give yourself enough time in case there is a bit of rain to try and get the result you'd like. So we knew we were going to have to work hard, and there were periods where we had to be very patient, hold on nerve, trust our plans and trust how we're going to go about things, the fact that we managed to do that and see it work and it come off is really, really pleasing.
As a captain, when you've got that challenge that you've just described ahead of you, but you have a balanced attack like you had, how much fun is it?
It's great fun. You've got so many different options, and it's great to see the lads really dovetail and complement each other. There were times when the Seamers might not get the praise that they probably deserve throughout this game. They built a lot of pressure. I thought the first hour this morning was great. We didn't necessarily get any wickets, but they didn't go away from a zinc field. They were scoring freely and rotating at a rate that you feel comfortable at. And towards the back end of the session, we got our rewards there. And I think there was times throughout the whole game, both innings, where that was the case. And the three spinners were outstanding as well. We had in outfields a lot of the time, trying to drive the boundaries up, but you've still got to bowl good balls in good areas, and we did that a lot.
It's a fascinating performance from England, because obviously away from home, we know they're great at home and when they've got the swing conditions, etc., but they seem to have fallen upon a very potent spin attack all of a sudden.
They did well, didn't they? There's a Jack Leach from Somerset who didn't have a great time in his first couple of England Test matches. Really found some form. He took a couple of ripping deliveries, got some wickets there in that match, and they just found a bit of consistency. What surprised me, Tom, was actually a couple of things went for England. A, they won the toss and batted first, which always helps on spin-friendly pitches, not even to bat last. But they put runs on the board. They dealt with adversity because they did lose some quick wickets early on. And Ben Folkes, on debut, often so difficult to perform in the subcontinent, not playing any international cricket. I think he said when he was called up a couple of weeks ago for this trip, he was on a lads trip in Portugal with his Surrey teammates after a successful county season. So he's come into England and not missed a beat there. Done a great job batting in the middle order, scoring that 100, really holding that England first innings together. And that's the key to surviving those subcontinent pitches, Tom, is getting a big first innings score when the pitch is at its best. And the pitch didn't really deteriorate much. England were able to kick on in their second innings, get a big lead and give the spin bowlers a target. Not since, I think, Graham Swan and Monty Panesar were at their best probably 5, 6, 7 years ago that England really could perform in the subcontinent with any confidence. So great that they've broken that longest winless streak in overseas test matches, but I do expect Sri Lanka to bounce back. It was an unfortunate test match for Ranganathan, his final test match. I think he's finished 7th overall wickets taken in test match cricket, which is a great record for amazing record for him for a left arm spinner with not too many tricks up his sleeve apart from great line and length and just had enough, you know, on it. Wasn't a massive turner of the ball, but did bowl amazing well for a long period of time, often in Murali's shadow for much of his career.
He was what was the stat that he was run out in his first test match, wasn't he, which was about what, 44 years ago or something like that, and he was run out in his last test match as well. He wasn't the quickest between the wicket, was he?
He was running too, and he took on the wrong person. He took on Ben Stokes from a ball that went down behind the wicketkeeper, and Ben Stokes whipped it over the top, and he was run out diving in. Oh, poor Ranganathan. Shame that he's kind of finished after one test match, one and done. It, you know, didn't play the series, but he wanted to go out, and what a great stalwart for Sri Lankan cricket. It's a shame that we've seen 3 or 4 of their magnificent players, Jayawardena, Sangakkara, now Herath, all depart in the last couple of seasons, which has left a massive hole for the Sri Lankan team. But good win for England, sets the series up nicely now, and it will be a fascinating second test match over in Kandy that begins on Wednesday.
Yeah, looking forward to that one as well. I think if it's okay with you, I'm going to nominate a new roving international cricket correspondent for us as well, because we've worked out that there is one of ours who's heading down to Sri Lanka. He won't be a million miles away. So if you're okay with that, if you're okay being our global cricket correspondent, Arch, how do you feel about looking after or taking under Ross Crist under your wing?
Yeah, I think it's a very safe pair of hands, Tom. And if any man can take up that challenge in Kandy or Sri Lanka, it's definitely young Ross Crist.
Crist, are you okay with that?
Yeah, brother, I'd love it. I think I'm actually already have the flight booked, so I'll be there next weekend. And I think I might be there 2 weekends after that as well.
Look at that. You could be our resident Sri Lanka correspondent.
He's there for the one-day series.
I'm just waiting for the passport to come in the mail, the Sri Lankan passport. Wonderful country down there. So, yeah, it could be awesome.
We'll definitely sort that one out. I mean, let's just go back to that second test in Kandy. Starts on Wednesday, you say?
Yep, gets underway Wednesday.
Going to be a few issues. Trevor Bayliss has been in a press conference today. He has been said that Moeen Ellis is not taking his chances at 3. One would read into that there's going to be a juggling of that batting order. We understand from the camp that JB's going to come back into contention. But again, nice problem to have, but it is a problem nonetheless. Josh Butler, Ben Folkes, Johnny Bairstow, all international keepers. Can you accommodate them all in a Test 11?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because you're taking up either a bowling or batting spot. If they all three justify themselves from a batting position, then maybe. But in Test match cricket, I don't think you have the luxury of carrying 3 batter wicketkeepers in your team, Tom. So some tough decisions there. Good to see Jennings get 100 in the first innings. He's been under a lot of pressure, and he's probably kept his place due to the retirement of Alistair Cook, and so that's given him an extra lease of life or an extra opportunity. He's grabbed that in both hands, scored 100, he secured a spot, but England still have problems at the top order. Not a great opening partnership. I think the young man from Surrey came in, was it Burns?
Roy
Burns came in, didn't do that well. Three is a real problem spot for England cricket, and they haven't got a lot of satisfactory solutions yet. Moeen Ellis has been tried. I wouldn't be surprised maybe if Johnny Bairstow slips into 3 and maybe with that ankle injury doesn't keep wicket and they keep folks in the middle order. It's tough for them. And you know, and then can you play Joss Butler as well? So maybe 3-2 doesn't go. And in the subcontinent, having that extra spin bowler, whether it be Moeen Ali, Leach, Adil Rashid, they've got three options there. You know, off spin, a right arm leg spin and a left arm spinner, which is great in Sri Lankan conditions, but can you carry three wicketkeeper batsmen? I don't think so, Tom.
Right, let's just I can't have a conversation about all things cricket without mentioning a certain Virat Kohli. Now, ordinarily, Virat is used to having huge amounts of praise lauded upon him from his adoring public over in India, but cricket fans worldwide as well. It's been a little bit different over the last few days. A couple of choice words from Virat Kohli about his leave India comment to one particular individual who had replied to his newly released app. That has prompted a tirade of abuse and comment going towards a man who is not shy of a brand or two, is Virat Kohli.
No, interesting this, and when you talk about trolling on the internet, I guess this is a classic case of Virat Kohli coming out and I think he had a few comments about cricket, and then he had a bit of a Twitter battle, I think it was.
It all came down to the, so it started off when he launched his new app, the Virat Kohli app, and off the back of that there was a live chat on it. And one of the comments from a cricket fan out there, which was backed up, was saying, I'm passionate, you know, I'm an Indian fan, but I enjoy watching, I'm enjoying watching English and Australian batsmen more these days than our current Indian batting 11. To which there was this almost sort of venomous response from Virat Kohli suggesting the fella should leave India, because if he's an Indian fan, he should be backing his team, which has therefore prompted this whole idea of like, because I'm just an Indian fan, I can't appreciate cricket in other parts of the world, bringing into the question the fact that he's a brand ambassador for Audi cars, he's a brand ambassador for this, he's a brand ambassador for that. And he's just got a taste of his own medicine, if you like.
Well, you know, is this a storm in a teacup? Is this when you're on social media, this happens, Dom, and you give yourself a platform to promote yourself and give yourself a platform to promote products and your brand, and that the Virat Kohli app, that's all about. You can't go and do that and have it both ways. So you're going to attract the criticism that goes with the fame of someone like Virat Kohli, and he's going to have a few people have a go at him. That's just the nature of the beast, unfortunately. And so if he's packed a sad and you know, told the young gentleman that he should leave India and go and support Australia or England or South Africa, then that's what it'll do. But for me, it's a bit of a storm in a teacup, isn't it? Who really cares? It's social media. It's what you open yourself up to if you're going to be on there and be if you're going to be vocal on social media. You've got to take the good with the bad.
He has tried to close or certainly write a line under this particular subject with this latest tweet saying, "I guess trolling isn't for me, guys. I'll stick to getting trolled. I spoke about how these Indians was mentioned in the comment, and that's all. I'm all for freedom of choice. Keep it light, guys, and enjoy the festive season." Right. In fact, we're going to be talking more cricket a little later on in this hour. Who are we talking to just after?
I think we may have the New Zealand Black Caps pace bowler Tim Southee just after 5:30. So let's watch this space, and hopefully we'll have Big Tim Southee talking about the yesterday's match over in Abu Dhabi against Pakistan.
That's all coming up in just a moment.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
You're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. You are listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. I've got rugby coming your way a little later on. Archie, the first of those autumn internationals this afternoon gets underway when?
Yeah, at 6 p.m. It's Italy, Georgia, and then 6:30, Scotland taking on Fiji at Murrayfield. Of course, the big match you're talking about, Tom, is at Fortress Twickenham, England hosting the New Zealand All Blacks at 7 p.m. So if you're looking for somewhere to watch the rugby tonight, head on down to Barasti. The big screen is fired up. Plenty of seats still available, but it is filling up quickly down here. Get on down to Barasti. 7 p.m, that's the All Blacks taking on England in southwest London.
Let's also get the latest from the Premier League. I think it's half-time, Matt Fortune.
Indeed it is, and it's 1-1 Cardiff-Brighton. Brighton, of course, down to 10 men. They've had a little reshuffle. Solly March, who'd been the most dangerous player for the Seagulls up until that point, he was substituted with about 10 minutes remaining. Yves Bissouma coming on to shore up the midfield, the space that Dale Stevens' red card had left there. And a bit disappointingly, considering Cardiff had come from behind and then seen them get themselves a player advantage, they didn't really kick on for the last 6 or 7 minutes of that first half, and it sort of floated by. I can't help but feel that that's a missed opportunity for Cardiff. Brighton now in the dressing room, shoring things up, getting the right messages from the manager, and if they can look half as competent as they looked before they went a man down, I think Brighton might be able to see this one out.
We'll keep an eye on that one for you, as we will all the other big stories of the day. Right, let's talk about one of those stories. We mentioned it a bit earlier on, the whole issue of Raheem Sterling. He's just signed a new contract for £300,000 sterling a week. This is what his manager had to say about it.
He could do that, yeah. But last season, Liverpool, Milner could say the pass to the second goal in the 44 minutes. It was legal goal. You know, VAR where it is. So the referees, I said for a long time ago, must be helped. Because they want to make a good performance. They want to, you know, they don't want to make mistakes. But today the game is quick, it's fast. The players have more skills than something. And you know, must be helped. Because at the end it takes 3 seconds, 4 seconds, 10 seconds to say from someone above, said, it's no penalty. Carry on, go. So it's what it is.
Interesting thoughts there from Pep Guardiola. I want to throw it open to the boys because obviously we've been talking about Raheem Sterling and his £300,000 a week, but he was also been in the headlines throughout the week. Champions League action, again, Manchester City dominant in their game midweek, but it was a goal fest that was prompted by a rather bizarre occurrence. For all intents and purposes, Raheem Sterling stubbed his toe, fell over his own feet and got a penalty.
Indeed he did. An excellent play, if you ask me. yeah, that's exactly right. He broke clear, was just winding up his left foot to shoot, and just with nobody within a metre and a half of him, just booted the turf, went careering over. I certainly don't think it was a dive. I think the pace that he runs at means that when he kicks the floor, he does fall over. And the referee pointed to the spot, and the debate has been whether or not Raheem Sterling should have owned up, I guess. But I think that's mad, because where does it stop? If the defender gives away a penalty, but it's not given, do you expect the defender to call the referee? Listen, pal, yeah, that was a terrible challenge. You should have given that against me. I think it's...
But that's what Pep's saying, isn't he? He's saying that players should be given more onus now or more responsibility in events like that to, say, put their hands up and go... But Pep's living in a completely different world. Which player is ever going to do that? In the heat of battle, you take any opportunity you get, don't you?
Well, the famous example that people have been quoting all week is Robbie Fowler against Arsenal at Highbury. But actually, what people forget from that instance, that Robbie Fowler was diving. It wasn't that it was a poor decision from the referee in terms of this incident where he's kicked the floor out of it. Robbie Fowler was actually diving and therefore obviously felt bad about it. And then what people also forget to say is that he stepped up, took the penalty. Yes, it was missed, but then the rebound was smashed in. I just don't think you can have a situation, because if you're expecting honesty from players throughout every single incident, you're never going to have it. It's going to be stop-start constantly. And the thing with referees is they actually have enough help, I think, now to get the decision right. Yes, VAR is not being used in the Premier League, but there's, especially in the Champions League, there's officials behind the goal. Now tell me, if that incident's happening 8 yards from the byline, why on earth is the man standing behind the goal not being able to call it and tell the referee that it's a bad decision?
Well, here's my question. We have VAR. It was relatively successfully used in the World Cup. I think we can all agree that it was generally positive and it was success and they got majority of the decisions right. Why is it on the Champions League? Seriously, I don't get it. And now UEFA is saying, oh, we might bring it in the advanced group stages and knockout stages. Well, you've got the technology. It works. It's been proven. Have it. Yeah. It's simple. Why have the guy behind the goal? What's the point if he's not going to make decisions?
Well, the great debate about those guys behind the goal is they actually don't do anything.
Well, what do they do?
At least VAR provides genuine insight. And, of course, that would have been called back. My only concern is, at that level, is that it's not... If it goes into the Champions League, it then goes into the big leagues across Europe.
It should be in the big leagues. It's going to happen.
But then you have the difficulty, of course, of when it's not going to be in the Ukrainian league, where Shakhtar come from, and then you're looking at an inconsistency. I totally agree with your point, Mark. It's mad that decisions as awful as that can still be made when we've had VAR successfully used. But implementing it when there's such a discrepancy between the very top tier, i.e. the Premier League, the Bundesliga, Serie A, and then some of those lower teams that come through, it will just make it a bit tricky.
But what I'm talking about is, okay, it's in the World Cup, so FIFA have adopted it now for their competitions. If it goes to UEFA and different confederations, it's in the Champions League, but it's got to be in all the Champions League matches. You can't pick and choose when you put it into the Champions League. It's either there for the season or not there for the season. You can't put it in the knockout phases, and you can't then choose to have it in the group stage. You have it for the whole thing. Then when domestic leagues choose to adopt it, like the Premier League, like Liga, Serie A, then they adopt it at the right time, La Liga. But if it's going to be in the Champions League, you have it for the whole competition. You can't start picking and choosing when you have it. And now UEFA saying, oh, we might bring it in for the thing. No, it needs to be there from the start to the end because it distorts matches. And you can't distort matches that have results but that flow through. So it's either there or not there. At the moment, it's not there. But don't bring it in group stage. It should be there from the start. It's proven it works. I don't get it. I don't get it.
But I think it takes instance like this to prove to the powers that be that things need to change, and they have the ability to fast track it. They have admitted that since this one, they're having a look into it. So don't be surprised if we don't see it in being involved later on in the tournament. Does it matter if it starts halfway through the tournament, at the beginning of the tournament?
Well, for me, it's a bit like a very similar thing in technology in cricket, where some countries choose to use decision, you know, the replay, instant replay for decisions, and some countries don't. Then you get individual statistics get distorted because some bowlers are bowling with, having the replays and getting a lot more LBW. Some bowlers aren't. Statistics get changes. You have to be consistent away how you apply technology in a competition. You can't pick and choose it. It's either there or not there for all teams to benefit from or all teams to have the level playing field. So if it's going to be in the Champions League, it should have been in there from all the stages, from the qualifying games, from these group stages, and for the knockouts. You
should
can't
been,
bring it in
but
the group
it's not.
Stage.
It should have been, but it's not, because probably the window between World Cup and the start of this new campaign was too short for it to get through the bureaucracy and the red tape. An event like this makes them turn around and say, why are we not using it? Come on, lads. It's a common sense move. And it is there and available, so why not get involved? Why wait until next season?
But my difficulty is, and I agree we can't implement it halfway through a tournament, but to do it in the pre-qualifying rounds of the Champions League, you say there was a short window. I'm pretty sure they kicked off the Champions League qualifying on the Monday after the World Cup final on the Sunday. You just can't, it cannot be done so widespread. That's the thing with international football, is everybody is going in on an even keel, so it's far easier to implement. But it kind of takes away from the point, actually, that we started this discussion on, is if the players were all much more honest, we wouldn't need it in the first place, right?
They're not going to be, though, are they? I don't think they're ever going to be. And that's the nature of the beast. Not just football, it's cricket. I mean, we've got that age-old debate, haven't we? We've had walkers in the games, and we've had the non-walkers in the games, and the art of not walking, the art of walking seems to have disappeared completely from the game because technology takes that away from it. So if in doubt, send it upstairs.
Oh, exactly. And it, you know, what we've seen in cricket and in rugby, and we've got all the rugby coming today with TMOs now and goal line decisions. Was it a goal? Was it a try? Was it not a try? The referees are reluctant to make decisions in a lot of sports, whether it be football, whether it be cricket, umpires in cricket, and rugby referees. If there's any doubt in their mind, they pass the buck on to the TV person and say, try or no try. They say, was this a penalty or was it not a penalty? Was this an LBW? Did he hit it or did he not hit it? But that's, as long as it's consistently applied, it's there. And that's my point. You can't start choosing when you introduce them into competitions. It just distorts results and distorts pure occurrences.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more sport for you. We're live from the grill, live here down at Barasti, and a lot to look forward to. In fact, next up, we talk international cricket with an international cricketer.
Fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Are you listening to Dubai Eye 103.8? Second half of the early kickoff in the Premier League just about to get underway. Cardiff taking on Brighton in that one apiece, but Brighton are down to 10 men after a red card in the first half. We'll keep an eye on that one for you. We're also building up to our rugby games. They get underway in just a little while, and there's some cricket news as well, Mark Archer.
Yeah, a couple of matches all finished yesterday. We've talked about the first test match over in Sri Lanka. England defeated Sri Lanka in 4 days by 211 runs. It's ended their longest winless streak in overseas test matches. Great win for England in Sri Lanka. There's also been some great ODI action around the world, Tom. Yesterday in Adelaide, Australia also ended their worst ever streak in ODI cricket. They won the second One Day International in Adelaide against South Africa by 7 runs. Australia batted first, scored 231 in their 50 overs. South Africa fell just short, 224 for 9 they were after their 50 overs. So 7-run victory. It's all set up nicely for the third ODI in Hobart. That is tomorrow. Just down the road in Abu Dhabi, Tom, we also have the Pakistan-New Zealand Black Cap series. This is really well poised as well. New Zealand, the Black Caps won the first ODI in Abu Dhabi, and then Pakistan won yesterday pretty comprehensively, I must say, by 6 wickets, chasing only a score of 209 for victory. So the third and final ODI between Pakistan and New Zealand takes place at the Dubai International Cricket Stadium tomorrow. afternoon, day-night match up there, and it's all to play for in both Adelaide, or in Hobart as it is with Australia and South Africa, and of course all to play for in Dubai tomorrow, if Pakistan versus New Zealand.
Great to have the Black Caps here in the UAE, and great to have the entire squad playing their cricket here, also enjoying as well. Just doing a little bit of research about the Black Caps and the build-up to this one, because obviously a number of them will be watching the All Blacks a little later on. It's going to be a good day, a good weekend for New Zealand sport. One man who got my attention is Ish Sodhi. Young man with a big future in the game at the moment, a New Zealand international cricketer who's represented the national team in all formats of the game, being recognised as one of the sort of go-to players for franchise cricket at the moment as well. In fact, made the number one ranking for T20 international bowlers earlier this year, and as I mentioned, got a big future in the game, and also might have a big future as a recording artist. Let's have a little listen to Ish on the ones and twos.
Alright, stop. Oleg, break it, listen. Ice is back with a brand new invention. Googly, turn to medium sharply. Even more deadly than a yoke from Starkey. Can you even block it? Yo, I don't know. Play for the spin and yo, bold. To the extreme, I spin the ball hella deadly. Hit your gloves harder than the bumper front Britley slam.
I've got to say, Tom, I hope he turns his leg spinner, because he doesn't have a career in rap, does he? But one man that might have a career in rap, I'm not sure. We're very glad to be joined on the line by the New Zealand fast bowler, Tim Southee. Tim, thanks for joining us on the show, The Grill, down here at Barasti.
No worries.
Now, just talk us through Ish Sodhi there. I don't know if you got to hear his little rap version of Ice, of Vanilla Ice. Is he hiding some talents from the teammates?
He's in the repping department, but I don't think he's in touch as yet, so I'm sure he'll keep trying anyway.
Well, let's hope he can keep bowling the googly anyway, because I think he better stick to bowling next, but he's done a great job in the T20 scene in recent years. But Tim, thanks for joining us on the show. Busy afternoon, I'm sure you found somewhere really nice, 7 p.m. watching the All Blacks a bit later. We'll talk to you about the All Blacks and how closely you follow them by away. But tough loss last night in Abu Dhabi. Great win in the first ODI. It's all level now. Just talk us through what happened yesterday evening down in the capital in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, he was going to do it. Down to play some great cricket. Obviously, won the T20 series 3-0. And then we managed to turn out a good performance in the first one, and then last night was a bit disappointing. So, I guess it's all to play for tomorrow night. We know we weren't good enough last night. In all three areas of the game, we know we're going to have to lift it in all three areas. And hopefully we can get a win and win the series tomorrow night.
Tough conditions to play against Pakistan here. They've played all their international cricket in the UAE pretty much in the last decade. They're very tough to play in the pitch conditions, and it's often very hot. The weather's actually cooled down nicely, though. But what makes Pakistan so tough in these conditions, Tim, to play against?
I think they know their game very well. As I said, they've made it home for the last number of years, and they're familiar with the conditions. And everywhere you go around the world, it is tough to tour. Tides are very good in their own conditions, and Pakistan are no different. Although they are their adopted conditions, they've made it their home for the last decade, and have played some very good cricket here. So we knew that it was going to be a tough series, a tough challenge, a tough place to come. But we've played some good cricket throughout the T20 series, and also in the first one day.
Yeah, well, first, just go back to that first one day. A fantastic moment there for your fellow opening bowler, left armer Trent Bolt, with a hat-trick. It's only happened a couple of times for New Zealand fast bowlers, but must have been great being on the field and seeing him take three wickets and three deliveries. Doesn't happen very often. It was an amazing moment there down in Abu Dhabi watching that.
Yeah, it was. The hat-trick's a very rare feat, and it was a pleasure to be out there and watching them rip open the top order of the Pakistan side. We knew that we probably had to get early wickets, and we probably weren't hoping for three and three balls, but it was an amazing experience to be out there. The atmosphere around the group and the the excitement when it happened was, as you say, something that no one in this group's felt in one day cricket. So it was a pleasure and something we'll look back on and be pleased to be a part of.
And just want to talk to you, obviously it's a really important match tomorrow up at Dubai International Cricket Stadium, the third and deciding ODI, but how far ahead is this group now looking? It's a Cricket World Cup in the UK is only really 6 months away. Is this the core group that you're going to be taking, do you think, to a World Cup? You're starting now to put your plans, get your partnerships, get your combinations right, really looking forward to that World Cup in England next year?
I think it's back to everyone's mind.
Big event comes around every four years.
So to say, we're not thinking about it, but I think strength of the side is to worry about the job in hand, and our main focus is to try and win this series tomorrow, and then we'll move on to a different series. But I think in over the next, I'm not sure how many one days we've got before the World Cup, but there'll be a lot of thought that goes into the one days in terms of planning towards the. Towards the World Cup, as you say, it's not too far away. We're missing a couple of guys, the likes of Martin Gupta and Mitch Satner, who are obviously out with injury, to come back in. But now we've got a chance for other guys to come in and I guess press their case for a spot in that event in about 6 months' time.
So much investment into the international game, Tim, in recent years, both the men's and the women's games as well. And we've seen the New Zealand women's team and squad have some extraordinary results in recent times. They're just about to get underway in the Women's World 2020 down in the West Indies. Is there much sort of sharing of knowledge through the sort of training and the preparations between the men's and the women's squads?
Yeah, I think it's increasing. I think the volume of cricket that the women are playing now is increasing. They're sort of touring similar parts of the world as us at times as well. So when you do cross paths, there is knowledge shared.
You're a man that's actually spent a lot of time playing cricket in the subcontinent, various IPL experiences. Does that stand you in good stead when you've now played in the IPL for many seasons? You're kind of used to these subcontinent conditions, the varieties that you get, the different types of players around world cricket you're coming across on a more often franchise basis. Has it really helped your game develop?
I think the various competitions around the world, you get a chance to play with different people, under different coaches, and I guess you learn a lot from other players that you probably thought you wouldn't share a changing room with. If you had asked me that, I was lucky enough to share a changing room with someone like AB de Villiers and Virat Kohli, and I think it's an amazing experience to be able to, I guess, see how they go about their business and try and learn from some of the guys that are the best to have played the game in the last number of years. So I think the amount of tournaments that are popping up and guys being involved in it. And I think New Zealand, they've had a number of players involved in a number of tournaments around the world. And I think it's only increasing their experience and their chance to go and learn as cricketers.
Last one from me, Tim, before we get you back to training and enjoy the rest of the evening. Now, you are on tour here in the UAE with the Black Caps. You're a man who's been on tour a number of times. You know how important home advantage is to a home team. So with that in mind, Tim, and with things later on this evening, Fortress, Twickenham, All Black, surely it's England by 20 points, isn't it?
Hope not. Yeah, I think we're all looking forward to it. We're sort of going to sit up and park up as a team and watch it, and we're looking forward to a good game of rugby. We're sick of the All Blacks giving the Aussies a hiding in the rugby, so hopefully the English can step up and give us a bit more of a challenge.
The English have been scared for the last 4 years. They haven't wanted to play the All Blacks, so let's hope it's a fantastic clash there at Twickenham. And Just give us a bit of insight to the Black Caps. Who's the best rugby player? Who rates himself? Who, when you're playing your touch rugby warming up, who really fancies himself as the man who probably should have played rugby instead of cricket? Who's the man in the group that really fancies himself to be a potential All Black?
A number of the guys I think used to play a bit of rugby. I think just as Kiwi, just sort of grow up, you play sort of ingrained in you somewhere, sort of rugby and cricket. So. There's not a lot of touch played in warm-ups, but when there is, everyone likes to pretend they've got some sort of dream of playing for the All Blacks at some stage, and some of them probably still trying to live that dream and hold out hope that one day there might be a chance.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Tim. I know you're a busy man, and we wish you all the best with the remainder of the series. Of course, it's the third and final ODI tomorrow. Pakistan taking on New Zealand. This series is delicately poised. One apiece. That's the third match up at Dubai International. So then best of luck, Tim, also with the Test series. And, yeah, let's even better luck with the All Blacks tonight at 7 p.m. But thank you very much for your time. And give our regards to the rest of the team, and all the best for the rest of your time in the UAE.
Cool. Thanks a lot, guys.
Really kind of all the team at New Zealand Cricket to sort that one out for us. A huge thanks to they, and a huge thanks to Tim Thursday for giving up time on his day off to take time to speak to us. He mentioned there one of his teammates who's had a great tour over here in the UAE, Trent Bolt, who has been making history in the last couple of days doing this.
Oh, that'll do. Off the pads, I think. Angle it into the pads of... Oh, I don't know, has it? New Zealand are happy. Babar Azam looked a little surprised. Are they saying out?
Yep, I'm happy that's out. I'm going to go up onto the big screen. Yeah, the decision is out. The decision is out.
Well, you heard it from Nigel Long. Oh, yes! Is it? Yes! There it is! There's another one! Shane Bond, you're not the last one to get one now. Trent Bolt is, but we'll go upstairs just to confirm it.
Okay, here comes ball tracking. Pitching in line, impact in line, hitting the wickets. Joel, I'm back on field to you.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
Listen to The Grill. We're live from Preston, where the game is always on. Let's get the latest from the Premier League. Matt Fortune.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, it's still 1-1 down in South Wales. Cardiff hosting Brighton. Brighton down to 10 men from about 35 minutes on. And prior to this, I was about to say that Cardiff haven't really made any of that pressure count in the first 15 minutes of the second half. But we've just seen young Kadeem Harris cut in from the left-hand side. Harris, who got the assist earlier for Callum Patterson's equaliser for Cardiff. He cut in, dropped the shoulder, very Iron Robin-esque, and curled an absolute peach of a left-foot shot that dipped just beyond the goalkeeper's reach and clipped the crossbar and bounced out. It would have been an absolute beauty of a goal. It's the first real danger that Brighton's goal has been put under. They are set up, as you might expect, a team with 10 men with two banks of five and then four players, not doing much moving forward. And for the most part, it's worked. It's maybe going to be a little bit of magic light that we've just seen from Kadeem Harris that might get Cardiff ahead.
Thanks for that. No goals over in Spain. 0-0 between Real Valladolid and Eibar. No goals there. Pompey, though, they've banged a few in. So they're on for FA Cup glory.
FA Cup glory. Well, that's the thing. When you get to this stage of the FA Cup for those lower league teams, you're looking at hitting the third round and trying to attract one of the big teams from the Premier League and a nice little moneymaker. But you're right, Portsmouth, who struggled by the looks of it in the first 40 minutes against Maidenhead. Maidenhead struggling in the National League, for those that don't know, is the first amateur division underneath the top four flights of English football. Portsmouth struggled. They broke through with Ben Thompson, a Millwall loanee, scored just before half-time, and they've added a second just after the break. So now you would think that Portsmouth will cruise in the second round.
Right, let's turn our attention to a few of the other stories that are doing the rounds. Got no rugby that's kicked off yet, have we, Archie?
No, 6 p.m. getting underway very shortly. The first of today's six matches in the Autumn Internationals. Early kickoff in Italy, they're taking on Georgia. And then at 6:30 at Murrayfield, Scotland will host Fiji. So I'll bring you a bang update when the tries start happening over there in Italy or in Murrayfield.
You can talk about that in detail throughout proceedings, so stay tuned for that one. Just also want to talk about the boxing, because it's a big night for boxing fans around the world. Big night for Tony Bellew fans as well. I know this is something that you and I, Matt Fortune, were discussing with Chris McCarty last night. We went and did the White Collar Fight Night. Good White Collar Fight Night it was as well. White Collar Fight Night 20 live from the Habitat Grand yesterday. 8 really good fights that all went the distance, so that sort of got us in the mood to talk international boxing. We're talking Tony Bellew. He takes on a tough opponent later on this evening in what we were suggesting afterwards is a crucial fight for the future of Tony Bellew.
Well, Bellew has, of course, tried to retire on several occasions in the past. Even, I think, after his last fight against David Haye, he was in the ring and he said, that is it. This one is... In fact, even after the first fight against David Haye, he was telling everybody that he was financially set for life and had no interest in going back. Obviously, he was tempted out of that against Haye a few months later. beat the Brit again, and now he's going for one last shot, and there is not a lot of people that fancy the big Liverpudlian for this one. He's up against the Ukrainian Oleksandr Usyk. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. And this is a smart, smart fighter. As I say, no one outside of Bellew's inner circle is fancying him for this. But to be honest, Bellew's rarely gone into fights where people have fancied him. He's risk of upsetting Tony if he's listening, he just doesn't look in fantastic shape ever. Yeah. And he's a cruiserweight, and you find cruiserweights tend to be much more athletic than the bigger heavyweights. You know, they look a bit more ripped, and Tony himself would obviously happily admit that he's not one of those that's got a chiseled six pack. Usyk, on the other hand, a big strong man. They both come in just underweight, Bellew a pound heavier, so it's a minimal difference. There's a 5-year age gap between the two, but the Ukrainian Usyk is 15 undefeated, 11 stoppages, so 4 have gone the distance, but he's not a big, big puncher. What you see with him is he works his opponents down. A lot of late finishes to his fight. It's smart boxing, it's good use of his jab. Bellew, on the other hand, is a canny fighter. He's a bit of a spoiler. He's got the smarts. As I say, he's 5 years older, about 20 fights more experience. That could tell. As I say, he has tried to retire, but it's going to be a big fight. There's a nice little undercard as well. Anthony Crolla is on the undercard in Britain. It's over in Manchester. We're expecting the main event at about 1:32 a.m. So it's a toss-up between the Superclásico and Tony Bellew for me, or an early night. I haven't quite worked it out yet. But it's going to be a hell of a fight for boxing fans. Bellew has never quite got, because he's not box office in the way that he fights, he's never necessarily received the adulation outside of the boxing circle. You look at big box office fighters coming out of the UK that do garner a lot more interest, maybe not quite as fun to watch if you're a boxing fan, but for this, Bellew, if he can pull this upset off tonight, it will be a hell of a way to go out.
Now, just before we go to the news at 6 o'clock, so I do want to get your thoughts on a story that's doing the rounds at the moment. Wayne Rooney, as we know, now plying his trade over in the United States for quite some time now. He has not been part of England's plans until this week, that is, because it seems that Wayne Rooney is going to get one last shot at the big time, as he's going to get one last run on for England in an international against the United States. This is what his manager had to say about it.
I've been in the unfortunate position having to leave him out of a squad, but I'm pleased to be able to be a part of honouring what he's done for England. I'm still able to look to the future in terms of the squad we've picked and the things I want to see, but also I've talked a lot to the players about the importance of the shirt, the history of the shirt, honouring former players. We've brought former players back in to speak to the squad. We've brought former players in to present first shirts to the squad. And I think all of the players would respect that Wayne's contribution deserves the best possible send-off. So I understand that's caused a lot of debate and conjecture. But I think it's a small way of appreciating what he's given to his country. We went to Germany and played when they honoured Podolski, and he started the game, in fact. And I think we were all struck by the fact that that was a really good way to recognise somebody who'd had a fantastic career for his country. I'd have to say I don't think we've been brilliant at that over the years. We can't do anything about how we've done that in the past, but I know what it's meant to the squad from 66 to come to St George's a few months ago and have a dinner when we named the entrance after Sir Ralph Ramsey. I know what it meant to Bobby Charlton to come to St George's when we named the pitch after him a few months ago. So I really think it's important that the former players feel part of what we're doing with England.
Those are the thoughts of Gareth Southgate about Wayne Rooney. I'm not sure where I stand on this one. And again, it's one of those ones that we discussed last night. He's retired from international football. He shouldn't therefore get to come back to play in international. If they want to do something to honour him, it should be, you know, something like an international testimonial, surely.
Well, that's sort of how this was billed initially. And then the fallout from it, they realised actually it was a competitive friendly, should we say. And then it was a charity match, but then none of the gate revenue was going to the charity, the Wayne Rooney Foundation, that was supporting it. I think it's a terrible, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It's a very odd decision. It goes against everything that Southgate has tried to initiate with this England squad. He makes an interesting argument there about what he's done with former players and all of that sort of stuff, but that doesn't involve playing. So Bobby Charlton wasn't being given a cap to go and get there, and all of the things that he did for England, he gets more appropriate measures. I think the argument that Rooney will be able to elevate some of the players, you look at Callum Wilson in his first England squad, might be able to learn a little bit from it. But I just think it dilutes the value of a yeah. cap after all. And I just, it's disappointing. The funny thing is, Rooney's actually, and I know it is only the MLS. He's done pretty well, to be fair. There could be an argument if there wasn't so many good English strikers at the moment doing well over in the Premier League. His 12 goals and 6 assists rescued DC United from a disastrous position, really, and really brought them up. They didn't make the playoffs, but they didn't make through the first round. But he could have got there on merit, I think. But overall, to pitch it as this and give him a sort of ceremonial 2 minutes at the end of a game, I just think is bizarre.
How long has he been retired for from international football?
I think he failed.
A couple of years, isn't it?
A couple of years. He failed to make Southgate's first couple of squads, I think.
So it's been a good 2 years, absolutely. Almost 18 months. And look, it doesn't make any sense to me. I all for honouring former players, but you can do that in a number of different ways. Why doesn't he come onto the pitch with his family before the match and give a wave to the crowd and sign some autographs and do a couple of interviews and see him off, or maybe speak to the team in the dressing room and show up at training during the week? But don't turn it into something it shouldn't be. Why not give a youngster a chance of coming off the bench for his first cap and getting a couple of minutes instead of Wayne Rooney? There's no point in it. There's no point in him playing. It doesn't make any sense to me. But look, there's probably other ways they could have done it, and I think they can still honour him and show respect. But where do you stop? Because there's probably lots of players you could say, well, they weren't given the proper sending off, and how far back do you go to start looking at guys that, you know, didn't finish the proper way in international football? So yeah. for me. They could have done it slightly different and still got the same effect.
It's going to be him paired with Jermaine Defoe up front, I think, as a strike force.
Well, Gary Lineker could put the boots on again. He'd come down from the bench. He was useful.
Gary, Alan Shearer, he'd come off the bench. He'll have a little run around as well.
Seaman will be in goal, won't he?
What about all those other former internationals? What about me? You know, what happened to me? I got left out.
Peter Beardsley.
Jamie Vardy must be kicking himself at the moment as well. What about his England international debut? Testimonial, I should say.
Gazza would love a go in midfield, wouldn't he, for a couple of minutes?
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we are building up ahead of our live game. We've got Newcastle-Bournemouth live for you at 7 p.m. here on Dubai I-103.8, courtesy of our friends and colleagues at TalkSport. One of those is Mr. Adam Bridge, who will be giving us team news. Newcastle-Bournemouth.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.